Who are you?
Tim Callender.
Summer Brooks.
Brett Filipek.
We host the Babylon podcast.
What do you want?
To study and discuss the Babylon 5 universe.
Where are you going?
To discover every scrap of B5 memorabilia.
Who do you serve and who do you trust?
Welcome back to another Babylon podcast. I'm Summer Brooks.
I am Tim Callender.
I'm Brett Filipek.
I'm so glad for that.
His meds have stunted his reaction time, but that's okay. We understand.
That's right. That's right. Give me a break.
Not a problem. I made a very interesting discovery earlier today.
What is that?
Well, Jeffrey and I had talked, I think earlier, and over the weekend, before the weekend, actually, since he was out here for the party. So it was before the weekend. The Babylon Park, remember that?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They have a shiny new website that looks, pretty.
Ooh.
Yeah, so everybody should head over to BabylonPark.com, and, oh yeah, they're on Twitter. As Babylon Park. So go say hi.
Okay. It looks like I'm going to have to start twitting then, huh?
Maybe. You might have to. But no, the new website is absolutely gorgeous, and they've expanded it into, obviously, other arenas here. It's BabylonPark.com. And they have, I don't know, Babylon 5, South Park, Voyager, Crusade mashups all over the place. It's quite amusing, actually. And like I said, the new website is very shiny.
Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe they're doing new things, or they're just trying to spiff it up and do whatever.
I don't know.
That's great.
I think I think we need to get... some people over here from Babylon Park and say, hey, what else?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Because I'm thinking Babylon Lord of the Rings could be hilarious.
Well, LOTR, Legend of the Rangers, Lord of the Rings.
This website is hysterical.
Isn't it?
This website is awesome. All right. Sorry, guys. I totally got shiny. I need on that one.
No problem. Yeah, that was my big news. Everybody go check out the new BabylonPark.com and follow them on Twitter. Tell them how much you love the old stuff.
Speaking of Twitter, I will tell you, because of our interview with Miss Patricia Tallman, I follow Patricia Tallman on Twitter now. She's hysterical.
Yeah?
I don't know if you guys follow her, but goodness, she's hysterical. I have rarely do I ever feel like inclined to respond to anybody's tweets, but hers I have felt inclined to respond to. She's hysterical. I'm just telling you.
Nice.
Check her out.
I've got a little news here too to pass on. This comes from Neil Ottenstein. He gathered up some Facebook posts. This is actually back in June, but I think it's still applicable at this point. Jan Schroeder posted a question on Facebook. With World War Z set to start shooting soon, do you think you'll be able to jet off and see any of the filming? And speaking of filming, any updates you can share on how progress is going on Voices from the Dead? JMS response was, Voices is moving ahead inch by inch. They really want to try and get this made in a timely fashion. Probably won't be at the WWZ shoot, as there's nothing more useless in all the world than a writer on set when he's finished writing. I would disagree with that, but I'll share that in a moment. And then JMS also post was asked to write and have turned in a piece for the next issue of Liberty Comics, an anthology comic published by the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, which supports the First Amendment rights of creators. It's a short, fun little piece, but has some teeth as well. The art looks great. So that's what JMS has been doing.
Very nice.
So there you are. There's your news.
Alrighty.
So I think we've got a little bit of feedback to knock out. Some voicemails, some emails, some comments to make. And so why don't we go ahead and take a break and take care, Odat.
Let's get her done.
Hi, I'm Kevin Batchelder.
I'm Wendy Hembrock.
And I'm Brent Barrett.
And we're the hosts of a new podcast called Tuning Into Sci-Fi TV,
where we discuss sci-fi and genre shows currently on television and some from the past.
We're fans just like you, so join us in our water cooler and back porch discussions of your favorite shows.
And strangely enough, you can find us online at tuningintosci-fi-tv.com.
Be seeing you.
Wait a minute. Isn't that what Bester says on Babylon 5?
Maybe. I never watched Babylon 5.
What? So you're a sci-fi geek who missed one of the best shows ever?
Hey, hey, no details, no spoilers. I'm still catching up on DVD myself. Besides, we're not really experts or critics. We kind of think of ourselves more like guides or sci-fi Sherpas.
I don't carry anyone's luggage, though.
Yeah, me either. We're what we like to call the viewer's digest for genre TV.
Yes, we're interested in the conversation shows generate.
And speaking of sci-fi Sherpas, where would you find one of those?
Craigslist?
Oh, see what I have to deal with?
All right, let's kick in with that first voicemail.
Okay.
Yes, this is the Master of Steel from Las Vegas, Nevada. And I have been going over the Babylon 5 tapes I have, and I have come up with a few observations and questions that I'm going to bounce off of you guys. Perhaps your illustrious panel can, you know, answer them for me. First question. In episode, season 3, episode 14, Ship of Tears, Bester's Psycor badge gets blasted by the female telepath. But later, in the next scene, we see that he's wearing that same, he's wearing a new badge. How did that come about? Another question. We know that the male Centauri has 6 10 testicles, as they are referred to, and supposedly the female had 6 receptors. Now, my question is, does this mean that male Centauri do not have a penis and that female Centauri do not have a vagina? Interesting. Also, Minbari, they look a lot like this on the outside. Do they also have human genitalia? And finally, Babylon 4. Whatever became of Babylon 4 when he went back 1,000 years to help in the first Shadow War? And how come there's never any mention of, at least by the Minbari, of it to the Earthers or Sinclair or Sheridan? And who are the races that helped the Minbari defeat the Shadows at that time, and what became of them? Just a few questions to fuel your discussion and make everyone go, hmm. Master of Steel, Las Vegas, Nevada, out.
Oh, we have answers.
Yeah, we've got answers.
We have answers.
All right. Well, first of all,
who wants to take which ones?
Well, I'll handle the most difficult one of all.
Bester carries
around a little case full of badges.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one gets blasted, and he reaches into his case and he puts a new one on.
Totally makes sense. Totally, yes. With you on that one. Because the most difficult of all of them. That was,
yes.
Thank you for braving up and taking that one, man. I couldn't handle that one.
I know. That was a tough one.
So, as far as the next, I can take as many of these as you'd like or not.
Oh, I've got comments on them too. But you go first, though.
So I would sit there and say, yes, the Centauri do not have a penis. They have, in fact, 6 penises.
That's right. Yes. And so, by extension, the Centauri female does not have a vagina. They have 6 of them.
6 of them.
Yes.
Now, my only question is, what happens after a night of drinking and you're a male Centauri? Do you, like, sometimes get things all twisted up in knots and you, I mean, is like tab A, slot B? I mean,
well,
how does that work?
You know, and that's an interesting thing that you bring up, because there the implication is that tab A goes into slot A. You know,
right.
because you think about, well, we see them in the very long night of Londo Mollari when they're trying to fibrillate his hearts, and they rip open a shirt and you've got the Centauri genitalia sitting there, and there is, you know, 1, 2, 3 top, middle, bottom. Okay, so the implication is, yeah, Brett, wow, I never thought about that. Maybe it's just one of those things that, because the Centauri are such heavy drinkers to begin with, maybe evolution is just taking care of it so that they'll find their way where they need to go no matter what the state of the inebriation is.
You know,
like in the same way, you know, in the same way that even if you've had a fifth of Jack Daniels, you will never be able to lick your elbow. Okay.
And I have tried that.
Right.
I have tried.
So I think it's the same thing there. Now, the Minbari do not have human genitalia because they're not humans. They're Minbari.
So they have Minbari genitalia. It may or may not be compatible with humans, but it is not by default human genitalia.
Precisely.
Right?
Now.
Okay, the last one.
Babylon 4.
B4. And not this, and not the cheesy thing from Star Trek Nemesis.
Oh, God, don't even bring that up. I'm gonna slap you now.
I did.
Okay.
B4. So there was a couple of questions in there. There's 2 of them. One, what happened to B4? I will answer it this way, as J. Michael Straczynski has explained it, that B4 survived the last Shadow War in such poor condition that they destroyed it and tossed it and called it good.
Yeah.
That's at least what he says in some of his interviews. Now, as for the races that helped, I have my answer. I will say hear what Tim has to say on his answer to this very important question.
Well, you know, I get the sense that there weren't any helper races involved. Now that could be a case of history written by the winners, and it's very clear. Here's the implication that I think that come out of that. Shadow War from 1,000 years ago. The Minbari, by dint of having Valen and Babylon 4 as a base to fight the Shadows and defeat them, use that to seriously enhance their standing in the galaxy. Obviously, they're not old one level, you know, first one's level, because that's the Vorlons and the Shadows at all. But amongst the quote-unquote younger races, they're clearly feeling like they're top shelf. So if there were any helper racers, it's likely that they were forgotten in the history books because the Minbari were writing the history books. But I also get the sense there probably wasn't anybody else. The Narn, you get the sense from what Jakar says that the Narn faced the Shadows, that the Shadows came to Narn and had bases established there, but it's never quite clear as to whether there was a resistance, but it's never quite clear as to whether or not the Narn were able to throw the Shadows off their planet, or if they just picked up and left because of what was happening in the main war elsewhere.
So interestingly enough, I take a different approach. I take a different tack on that one, my friend. As I recall from whatever episode it was of Babylon 5, the Minbari were considered one of the younger races back then, and they would have been at the time, as I recall, it was mostly the first ones who pushed the Shadows back with the help of some of the younger races, and the Centauri were one of those younger races.
You mean the Minbari?
The Minbari. Yeah, the Minbari were one of those younger races. That was how I took it. They were that the Minbari were just kind of minor. I mean, they were like the humans were, in this Shadow War. They were the top dog of the minor races, right? Much like they are now, or they were like one of the top dogs of the minor of the minor races. That's the approach I took out of that when I watched it. He did ask another question in there, though. He asked, why do we not hear of what happened to B4 from anybody else, from the Minbari? And there's two ways you can answer that. They did say that Delenn did say that many of the records were lost over the in the 1,000 years since from the first Shadow War, and so they could actually have lost the records of it.
Right.
Or I truly think that not so much that the records were lost, but I still maintain, we talked about this, I think, you know, months ago, I think they were purposely destroyed, because if you left them around, You would have had a whole bunch of foreshadowing that could have had impact to the future events had you known what was going to happen. You know, so it was in order to, I truly think that I think that Sinclair went back. They won that war, and then he made darn sure that there was no sign and that he was around, and that the origins of that station were a complete mystery, and that station was gone, so that 1,000 years later, history would unfold as it was supposed to. Because it's one of those things that if you know something's going to happen, there's a good chance you may screw it up and it not happen the way it's supposed to happen.
Right.
So that's my theory. That's my theory on the whole thing. That's why the Centauri don't talk about it or things of that nature, is because if there were records out there, they were destroyed. And they were done, and that was done intentionally. My take on it,
I think that's a good take on it. I also think that I would say those records might also have been partially destroyed, not by Sinclair, but by other members of Minbari cast, because they're, according to the history, at one point in time, Valen and his followers are basically sent to exile and pursued.
Oh, that's right. You're right.
And so I would suggest that at that point, that what happened was the records were expunged from the history, so that it made, you know, for whatever reason, whether it's that a certain sect, whether it's warrior clan or warrior sect or whatever, would be able to say we did it without any help, despite the fact that it was Valen coming, showing up magically. You know, I don't know. But I think, either way, yes, I agree with you. I think the records were purposely destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
there we go.
Great questions. There you go.
Those are good questions.
Those are good ones.
Yeah. All right. Next message.
Hey, Babcasters. It's Jason from Murfreesboro again. Calling in reference to show number 227 and 228, talking about Earth Force ship names. How it seems like a lot of them are named after Greek or Roman gods or mythology. I can point to at least two different ships that do not have either one of those types of names, the Roanoke and the Churchill, and both of them were seen in Shepherd's Dream. I know there are examples of others. I'll see if I cannot find them for you, but I wanted to let you know that it's not always Greek or Roman mythology. Keep up the good work. Thanks. Bye.
He is absolutely correct.
And you know
he
what?
Mentions it, go ahead.
I was trying to look for Churchill was something of a legend in Greece because of something he did in World War I, but I couldn't find it, so never mind.
Wow. I am pretty sure that during World War I, he did sit there and order the invasion of Turkey, and
yes,
the Turks and the Greeks are not the best of friends. So you could make the assumption that anything that Churchill did to impact the Turks, the Greeks would have liked, and therefore he would have been elevated to some kind of Greek like position of wonder and awe.
But I have nothing for Roanoke, so you know the whole thing kind of collapses.
I'm going to sit there and say, no, actually, I think we could sit there and say that that was maybe a political favor for somebody because they lost a bet, or you know, they flipped it. It could have been the the Sparta, or it could have been the Roanoke. And they flipped a coin, and Roanoke won for some reason.
Yeah,
drinking.
Did,
it was a drinking game.
Uh-huh.
What's that?
Or they did paper, scissors, rock, lizard, Spock. And
yes.
And they lost.
That's how it went down.
Yeah, I think that's how that went down.
I thought you were going to go with the loss of the Roanoke colony was a reenactment of an ancient Greek myth and give me the myth, but
of the 300 of Thermopylae. Exactly. It was like the 300. Thank you, Summer. That was it. The Roanoke colony of 300 colonists in America was like the 300 at Thermopylae, and they were wiped out and therefore elevated to like wonder and awe and equality of the Greek something or other.
Yeah.
There you go. I'm out.
Yeah,
really
we got to figure it out.
Okay.
Sorry, dude. We got to figure it out. Okay, go.
Hey, Jason. Hey, guys. It's Jason again from Murfreesboro. I promise I'm not trying to be the next Gary or Edmund or anything like that. But I wanted to call about, I think, episode 221 when Tim was mentioning Justin Bieber. I've been coming up with a curse for mentioning his name on this podcast, and I finally come up with one. I hope for the next year and a half, everything you drink tastes just like Zima. I'll talk to you later, guys. Keep up the good work. Bye.
So,
Jason, how do you know that I'm not drinking Zima right now?
No need to be nasty. What did we do?
Apparently, I mentioned Justin Bieber somewhere, and I have
did.
To admit, I did. See, I don't recall
you
that.
Did.
That might have been the Zima talking.
In the grand scheme, in the grand scheme of worthless celebrities, he's not even on the list. So I don't.
See,
I don't
know. But see, here's the thing. This is what I realized. I happened to be. Having a little bit of dinner with a roommate, and she turned on Wheel of Fortune. Vanna White has absolutely no purpose in life anymore. because they don't, you know, when the show started 1,000 years ago, they had the big triangular thing she had to turn around. They lit them up, and as you turn around, there was the letter because you had to have a human being to do that. Now they light him up and she like touches the monitor where the letter is going to appear. She doesn't need to touch the monitor. Okay. She doesn't need to do anything. She has no purpose. So even just,
I don't want to break your heart. I actually think she's animatronic at this point.
I believe it. That's not breaking my heart. It's not that I'm a fan. I hadn't watched Wheel of Fortune in a long, long time. First of all, she doesn't look any different. So yes, there's something squirrely going on there. And second of all, you know, at least Justin Bieber entertains tweenies, and you know whether that has value or not to us as adults is debatable. But he's doing something. Vanna, I don't know what purpose she serves in this world anymore.
Here's the one and only question I have on this whole guy's comment, because quite honestly, I do think that there should be some kind of penalty for mentioning Justin Bieber on this podcast. Yeah. But what I want to know is, he says a year and a half. Why a year and a half? I mean, really? Why not 2 years or a year or
5 years until they find the Drac plague cure?
Yeah, I mean, 364 days, and on that last day, it finally tastes like something different. Why a year and a half? I'm just curious. If you could call back and give me that logic, sir, I would appreciate it. Because I am going to lose sleep tonight because of this. I'm telling you.
I don't know.
It's tragic.
Hey,
I'm sorry.
This is Jason from Murfreesboro. Listening to show number 223, The Long Road. Got an interesting question. Galen asked the crew of the Medusa for some local currency. And they give them the most expensive currency out there, the most valuable. Why didn't they just tell them it's like the relative values of the coins? You would think that was something that they would have given them, unless they were trying to actually cause an incident. I just want to get your moral thoughts on it. Thanks. Bye.
Wow.
It has often been the case where people coming into a new territory aren't familiar with the local economy. Sure, they can see all the denominations of money, but they don't realize that even though there are gold and silver, most of the average people just carry copper. And they just don't figure on that. It doesn't dawn on them that, you know, having someone dressed as a local farmer but flashing silver might be suspicious to everyone in town, thereby getting your operative either knifed or mugged. It's not a lack of intelligence as to what the currency is. It's a lack of understanding of how the local economy flows. That's all. And it happens frequently.
Indeed.
That makes sense.
Gypsies.
Hi, this is Jim from St. Louis. Wanted to drop you guys a voicemail to say how much I really enjoy the podcast and hope you keep doing it. I'm probably a year behind in listening to them, but I've listened to almost everyone. My kids have been watching Babylon 5 since they were probably first or second graders now. They've seen the whole series through at least 4 or 5 times, and they love it. In fact, they're, "Daddy, Daddy, can we watch another episode of Babylon 5? But anyways, keep going, and don't ever let it end, because you guys are fantastic. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, too bad this is the last episode of the Babylon podcast.
Thank you so much, everybody, for our 5-year journey. We appreciate you being with us this whole time. And like all good guys, we're done. I'm just kidding. I will say thank you, sir. I'm glad you're enjoying the show. I think all of us intend to do this as long as you guys keep listening. And even if you stop listening, we'll probably still keep going anyways, honestly, because we're bored and have no lives.
I just never stop talking, so.
We can keep going forever. I believe Mr. Meningay has already put in his bet, his pool. It's like, okay, this is done.
Hmm. So yeah, we'll keep going. You keep listening. Deal.
That's it. That's Deal. It. That's it. We ply Mike with good scotch. He'll keep doing this.
I can give him some bad Jack Daniels. I got budget for that.
Nope, we need donations. In? Donations to come in for good scotch for Mike. We can keep this going probably another year.
Or at least another there hour, anyways.
Yeah, I got 5 more minutes. All right. Is that was that it for our voicemail for this
no,
for now?
A couple more, yes, right?
Wait, no, I thought that was the last voicemail.
No, that was it.
That was the last.
Oh, okay.
So I think it's break time.
Yep, and we'll come back. We'll do some emails.
Sounds good.
Listen, I know how you feel. I've been there. You feel like you had a dream to write. Once. There were stories in your head that were unparalleled and so much better than the stuff you bought in bookstores. You would be an author. You would show them all. But maybe along the way, you got discouraged. Maybe you bowed to the demands of life, family, career. Maybe you just thought you wouldn't be good enough or that it was too late. But I'm here to tell you, you should be writing. At 5 years old, I Should Be Writing is one of the first writing podcasts. Author Mer Lafferty speaks to wannabe writers on the issues of keeping going from the beginning early stages of writing to keeping professional in the later stages of building a career. I speak weekly to professional authors about their work, their process, and advice that they have for you. There really is nothing stopping you. No, not that. Not that either. Nope. Whatever you're thinking of, it can't stop you. Trust me. Listen to I Should Be Writing at ishouldbewriting.com and learn more. Twice weekly and free, ishouldbewriting.com. Because you should be writing.
that I should be riding. I should be working on my craft.
And just to prove to you that we don't just take voicemails, we will read your emails too. Tim has another crop of written messages from our loving fans.
I will say Tim will read the email, because quite honestly, if you send me the email, it needs to include pop-up pictures and be written in crayon. And they haven't made email do that yet.
Oh,
so we're gonna leave it to Tim.
Give him time.
Very good.
Go.
Okay.
All right, Tim.
All right, here we go. So this comes to us. Actually, I'm just going to mention that longtime fan of the show, Kate Altman, Kate in Chicago, sent an email, said that she's been gone for so long and just been catching up again. So I just wanted to give a shout out to Kate, because she's been with us from a long time.
Yay.
So this comes to us from Will Frank. And he writes, the title of his email is The B5 Novels, an ebook future. He says, "Hey, Babcasters, Will, a.k.a. Sci Fantasy here. As I write this, it's June 20th, and JMS has just finished a Twitter press conference. So one of the questions that came up was whether or not the B5 books will be available as ebooks. JMS's answer is that it's out of his hands, and a company would have to license the rights from WB, which got me thinking," says Will, "in ways I shouldn't. Specifically, what if someone went to the WB and said, we'd be happy to do all of the prep work and fixing up the B5 books for ebook distribution. You just need to tell Amazon and Barnes & Nobles and the like that these are official and we can set a price point and so on. Would WB go for it if it was handed to them on a silver platter? For that matter, is this feasible legally? Depending on how the contracts were structured, there might be a problem with the contracts with the writers, work for hire or not, which these certainly were. Writers have rights, which is what took Star Wars so long, actually. But if it could be doable, I think it would be a trivial matter to get some fan interest in helping to fix up the chapters and formatting, make sure everything was clean, and process it down into a solid ebook. Thoughts? Who at Warner would one need to talk to anyways?"
I don't know. I have sent a couple emails in over, 6 months or so, and haven't actually gotten a response. So I'm probably not asking in the right department. I don't even know.
Okay, well, I'm also going to toss a spanner into the works.
Okay.
Light of our interview with Peter and Karen David, and their comments about the fact that they couldn't comment on the unavailability of the third book of the Centauri Prime trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
I can't help but wonder if there's some other something out there that's sitting there that's waiting, like we have to wait 100 years before we find out what happened to JFK's brain, sort of thing.
I don't know.
Mm.
Because the problem... we have two separate publishers that dealt with the books. We have Bantam Del Spectra, who did the first 9. And then we have the trilogies that were licensed to Del Rey. And I don't even know if those were handled by the same group inside Warner Brothers. You'd think they would, but... with Warner Brothers, you can never assume the obvious.
That's right. Exactly.
I might have to do some more digging to see if there's a particular... I don't know if it would be the media licensing arm or if there's a particular publishing department. With ABC TV, they are, Hyperion Books is their actual... publishing arm. They print the books for Castle and for Pretty Little Liars and all that. So they're actually, linked in. They actually have their own publishing house. Time Warner Books doesn't do genre fiction. They do nonfiction stuff, at least the last time I looked. So I don't know.
Yeah, and given what we've heard about how Warner Brothers is structured, you know, I don't know how much of that might have changed in the merger with time, but...
And how each little group competes with each other.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Right, precisely.
Oh, my goodness
gracious. Precisely. All right. Any other comments on the ebook situation?
Somebody point me in the right direction, I'll keep asking.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. So next one, this comes to us from Danny, and this is actually more about the JMS Twitter press conference in general, but there's some questions in here that, you know, will address specifically the ebook situation, but here's a bunch, and I'm going to read a couple, and I'm going to pause, and we'll get comments because there's a lot here. So here we go. As JMS writes, basically it's going to, he'll take and try to answer all questions in the next 20 minutes and go. He says, no question is too stupid unless it's one of mine, so the odds there are pretty good. So someone named Shane Smith writes, any new projects in the B5 universe in the works? Answer, that's a far more interesting question than you might imagine, but I can't talk about it at the moment. Okay, can I just say, I am really getting tired of this.
Like I said, we've known this since April. Move on.
And before that, and it's like, you know, I'm beginning to, you know, I'll believe it when I see it kind of thing. So, I mean, correct. How interesting is that? I mean, what does that mean? An interesting question. Another writer, which comic, any company, would you like to take a stab at someday? And Strizniki writes, I don't want to stab anyone, but I'd love to do something with a haunted tank one of these days. And I got to tell you, the Haunted Tank was one of the comics I read as a kid. I'd love to read a JMS Haunted Tank story. That would be awesome.
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, my God. The Haunted Tank was a war comic that DC put out. I think it was actually the main feature in a general title. I don't think it was ever called The Haunted Tank. It was like Thrilling War Tales featuring the Haunted Tank or whatever. And what it was a little... Stuart tank, which were called Honeys. They were light tanks in World War II. And the tank commander was a guy named Jeb Stuart. And the ghost of Jeb Stuart would show up and help guide him to make command decisions in whatever firefight they were in. It was not that it was... I was 11 years old or whatever, I thought, well, that's kind of cool. You know, in the art, they'd have the tank, which is really cool, and then they'd have this giant ghostly Jeb Stuart up on his horse standing 30 stories tall, and it was pretty bitching. So, you know, it was a weird conceit. So, like I said, I'd like to see a Straczynski Haunted Tank story. That would be pretty cool. Andrew Hackard asked the question, which B5 character story do you wish you'd gotten to tell more fully? And Straczynski's answer was probably Lorian.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I would have. That is an interesting answer. I wouldn't have figured that one.
Who would you guys have liked to see more story of?
Let's see here. Honestly, I had a deep, deep love of the character of Mr. Morden. I would have liked to have known a little more about him.
Mm-hmm.
I loved him as a character. I think Ed Wasser was the man.
Yes.
Now, but you, Summer, who would you like to see more of?
I'm sure. I always wanted to know a little bit more. I always wanted to see more about, you know, how Marcus became a Ranger. I would have liked to have seen more than one episode about Ranger training, you know?
Yeah.
I think a comic book of the story of Narun during the Earth-Nimbari War would be just awesome.
That would be good. Ooh. That's a good call on that.
That would be awesome. I will agree.
I would like to know more about number one and how she rose to lead all of the Mars resistance. Because one of the things, you know, going back and watching bits and pieces of episodes in preparation for Pat Tallman's interview, she is a really no nonsense doesn't even sum it up. You know, that mm-hmm. scene where they've got Garibaldi and Franklin's trying to convince her, look, you know, if it was one of your guys and he had this story about being controlled by a telepath, wouldn't you want to hear him out? As she pauses and then raises the PBG and goes, no, and gets ready to shoot Garibaldi. And, you know, I get the sense that that's not the first time she just shot someone outright,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that's how she ran that war. And man, I'd love to know what makes a person, I'd like to see that story, what made that person get to that point where it was, you know, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one. I mean, because that's kind of her attitude. Mm-hmm. You know, Steven, you know, mm-hmm. you're great in the sack, but I'm killing this guy because he's betrayed everybody.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, really, that was the attitude right there. It's like, wow. So what a story that would be.
Although, you know, it's interesting now that you mention it. I would love to have gotten into a younger Bester.
Oh, well, then you need to read the Psychor trilogy.
Yes.
Yeah, I know. I do. I know that. And if anybody ever listens to the Slice of Sci-Fi podcast, ding, you would know that the last book I read probably had pop-ups and was in crayons.
Yeah, I believe the joke that I told was, how was it? I think Hickerson made a typo and said something about you needed to have your, you know, crack a back instead of crack a book. And I said, maybe subconsciously, there's something wrong with Brett's back and his hands can't get close enough to hold a book. So he does need to have his back cracked in order to have that work. But the Morden's backstory is told in The Shadow Within.
Yeah.
So there's another book you need to read.
There you go.
Uh-huh. All right.
Okay. Eric Paquette asked the question, will we see another tabletop RPG set in the Babylon 5 universe? And JMS response is, there is no licensing currently going on for B5.
Hmm.
Wow. That's a man who owns his property and has no intention of whoring it out.
Well, but he doesn't own all of it. I mean, I think that's one of the things, like with the what is it, Summer? I want to say Jacqueline.
Yeah, he only owns the licensing for whatever movie comes along. Everything else, Warner Brothers has under lock and key.
Right, and there's a reason that in the script books that the only photos that they could use would be candid shots that people shot on the set, and that's why there's no official Babylon 5 artwork on the covers, is because the images are owned by Warner Brothers,
mm-hmm.
you know, and some other things like that. So there you are. Yeah, it's not simply JMS saying nobody can play with my universe. It's all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it makes you wonder what kind of licensing fees they're asking for that you couldn't use friggin' pictures. I mean, seriously, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it may not be a matter of fees. It may just be this is our property and you can't have it. I don't know. I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of it. Jeffrey would probably be a better person to ask. We might have to rope him in.
That's just crazy. It's like, got all of this material here and we're not letting anybody have it. Really? How's that working out for you in the cash flow department?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here we go. Next one. If this comes from someone named Mark Andrew Croft. If someone had a fresh take on Babylon 5, would you give the blessing for a reboot? The answer is no, not at this stage. Perhaps later when I'm old and enfeebled. Well, that would be next week. Michael Stone says, what is next for the Babylon 5 universe and when will we see it? Which is sort of trying to take another tack at the whole thing. And the answer, of course, is more at a later time when I could talk about it. Answer unclear. Please try again. So says the Magic 8 Ball. and then the follow up is not to get all childlike about it, but any estimate on when you will be able to talk about it? And Straczynski's answer is when all parties have said it's okay. Okay, can I just tell you that my frustration level is hit about 25?
Yeah.
I can hear the boiling point in the back of your head.
It's like,
and what makes it even funnier? You're so angry right now, I can read your thoughts. Your thoughts are, he's playing all these mind games with Babylon 5 instead of working on Lenten.
That's what. Oh, yeah, I was going to save this one for last, but I'll get to it right now. Here we go. How is the JM Rivas ask, or Rivas, how is the Lensman adaptation going? And the answer is on the shelf at Universal, which isn't sure there's enough name value to the title to merit the massive investment to do it right. So, as disappointed as I am, at least that's the proper response. It's
oh, bummer for you, man.
Yeah,
bummer
well,
for you.
That's my life. What can I say? And if anybody was actually still playing the game, we were about 45 minutes in. So take a drink. someone named Tim Jump, not me, asks, okay, got one that I've always wondered. What is the thing dangling in the middle of the triluminary? Looks like a microchip. The answer, it's a chip, correct, from a very early piece of Minbari tech passed down the line. And then someone that goes by the handle of Nihilim says, wait, the microchip wasn't part of Sinclair's link? So much was said about those being tied to the DNA of the user. And the answer is, and where did Sinclair end up? He asked, leading the witness. So there you go, folks. Maybe that's how the Triluminary was able to recognize that it was Sinclair, the DNA, because the link lit up saying, oh, hey, I know you.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
I don't know. It's a possibility, but that sounds like it's got some dents from a crowbar and a shoehorn in it.
Well, but, you know, it's the whole time paradox thing.
Yeah.
You know, time is infinite. I'm not infinite. You're not infinite. This is the wrong tool.
And how did he snap that chip into three pieces for the three triluminaries?
Very carefully.
Mm-hmm. Which came first? The link or the triluminary?
Yes. Yes. David Cornett asked the question, given how TV has changed since 1993, with lots of shows, with ongoing stories, etc., how would B5 be different if you made it now? And Straczynski's response is, that's not a tweet reply. That's a dissertation. It's not just the tech. It's not just the tech. I'm not the same writer, so it would be very different. Wow. That, to me, is very interesting.
That is interesting.
When he says very different, what does that mean? Because I think, it wouldn't be Babylon. Well, I mean, the whole part of Babylon 5 was the concept. Space station, at war, ancient aliens. I mean, we never really had seen anything like that.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
All right, here's another one for you. This is just to add to the frustration level. You ready? David Cornett, again, writes, would you ever return to making weekly television again? Answer, under the right conditions, yes. More on this later.
Okay.
Just wondering whether that might be Babylon 5 related, maybe?
Did anybody ask any questions about why he put out that call for animators?
No.
Damn it.
Nothing. Here's one for you, Summer. Ready? Danny writes, and this is the Danny that's sending the thing. What's the favorite thing you never got to do in Crusade? The answer? The rest of it.
Ha! There we go.
Yeah. John Hill, what would have happened to the Rangers if the Legend of the Rangers movie had led to a series? The answer, it would have been really, really cool.
Thanks.
And this is what really sucks, because you have to get permission from Warner Brothers to write more books following the rest of these stories, and that'll never happen.
Yeah. Okay, one last one here. This is from Jeff Hughes. Says, Babylon 5 newbie. Been told that I can't skip ahead. I've seen the first year and a half season, first 1.5 seasons on Netflix, and I want to skip to 3. What say you? Straczynski, if I've suffered through it, by God, you need to suffer through it, too.
Well, no, the fact that he got halfway through season 2 and doesn't want to keep watching the rest of it, I'm like, what, did you just watch that too fast? What happened?
Yeah, I know, right? Exactly. That's silly.
Huh.
Silly.
Seriously silly. Silly man.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it? Done?
There's a bunch of them. Here's one that I one last one here that I thought would be very interesting here. David Cornett again writes, if Stephen Moffat asked you to write an episode of Doctor Who would you be interested? The answer is, who do I have to kill? And I have suggestions if you don't.
Oh, man. Nice. So,
yes, I would love to see a JMS Doctor Who script as well. That would be pretty sweet. So there's a couple others that, you know, others in this maybe we'll get this post up the website. Some others that have to do with some of the comics work that he's been doing and some other general questions that are interesting and some that are a little off-color,
If there's a transcript of that entire thing someplace, we can put it on the website easy.
Yeah, I think that's what Danny had sent me was most of it. So we'll get that posted up so everyone can see the rest of it. But I've picked out the B5 related ones for our reading. So.
Very nice. Very nice.
Oh, so is that it?
I'm just more impressed that you can do an interview and 140 characters at a time. That's impressive.
Yes, you can. It's amazing. It's amazing what people can do. And it's funny
go ahead.
No, you're reminiscing about the haunted tank. For some reason brought to mind, there was an old series, I think it was Marvel, that was a Western comic book, but they were all like horror related.
Wasn't that Jonah Hex? Wasn't that the shtick for Jonah Hex?
No, it wasn't Jonah Hex. This was like an anthology. Like each issue was a different particular contained story. Think of it as Twilight Zone set in the Old West, you know, but more horror. And
I got you. I understand.
I honestly can't remember the title of it, but I'm sure someone out there will remind me of it. It was in the mid to late 70s, if that helps anybody.
There you go.
But,
yeah.
As always, come to the website, BabylonPodcast.com. Leave your comments on the articles we find. And, you know, if you find something Babylon 5 related on the web that I missed, let me know. I'll put it on there. Forums, farpointforums.com for more chatting, because you can never get enough chatting when you're talking B5, right?
Nice.
Email address to send in your own questions and comments is babylonpodcast@gmail.com. And as always, the voicemail number to leave your own message is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The Great War quitted us all in 140 characters or less.
And we'll see you next time on the other side of the TARDIS going through the jump gate.